Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for this Tuesday, September 30th, 2025, and I'm coming to you, as usual, from my home studio. We'll start on the front page. Community, nurturing nature. Horticulture crews shower the flowers at Decatur Parks. And it looks like it's just photos with captions, but they are beautiful. Large color photo, Debbie Robertson with the Decatur Parks District Horticulture Department waters the flowers in front of the Decatur sign in Nelson Park on Monday, September 29th. And boy, she had a beautiful day. So the lake in the background, the Decatur sign reflecting the beautiful sunlight, and she has a long-handled wand-type sprayer, and it's kind of frozen by the photo. It's just really cool to see. It looks like a spray and a mist coming out. Joseph Ressler photos, Herald and Review. Randy and Debbie Robertson with Decatur Parks District Horticulture Department water the flowers in Nelson Park. The couple said they are busier than usual this year due to the unseasonably dry weather. And there's a flatbed truck with a pump of some sort and a hose. And then a large water tank shown, just a little piece of it on the far left. And they're in the parking lot preparing to water the flowers in a close-up of a really beautiful butterfly. A butterfly enjoys the lantana plant in the flower bed in front of the Decatur sign in Nelson Park on Monday, September 29th. So it's brown and yellow and white and a big spot on its eye that makes it look like it has a massive eye. And a brown body as well on red, yellow, and green plants. All right. From the State House, data centers at center of stalled energy bills. This article is by Rich Miller. One of the reasons a giant energy-related bill failed to pass the Illinois General Assembly last spring was because organized labor remained neutral. At least one union opposed the bill, but overall the unions weren't helping to move the ball forward, and they have a whole lot of much-needed legislative muscle. That's why the goal of the majority Democrats has always been to have support from unions and the major environmental groups when it comes to these big energy bills. And this one was big. A major electricity storage program and an amped-up energy efficiency component were just two of the items. But last week, a top official with the Illinois AFL-CIO confirmed the organization is still neutral on language being circulated by negotiators. Unions often tend to support their employers on issues like this. If something is going poorly for an employer of large numbers of union workers, then, unless the employers are viewed as hostile, the unions will push to improve their lot. This is particularly true in the public utility and energy spaces, and has been forever. So what's the issue here? Well, one of them is data centers. An environmental lobbyist expressed dismay last week, saying labor support for building more data centers has a 50-50 chance of derailing the entire energy omnibus process. John Pletz recently had a very comprehensive and informative story about the data center industry in Crane's Chicago business. Bottom line, the industry says the state's Biometric and Information Privacy Act is stalling construction of new data centers, which generate millions of dollars in local taxes and employ union workers. For your background, the legislature did not include data centers when it revised the law in 2024 to protect many businesses from gigantic lawsuits for collecting biometric data without informed consent. The data centers want the same sort of protections for allowing customers to store biometric information in the cloud. Others say they're already covered by the law, but the companies still don't want to take any chances in court. Pletz's piece included some strong statements of support for the data center's position from a business manager for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 134. About half the local's membership works in data centers, which rely on lots of trained electricians to keep the centers running. They're becoming a vital source of jobs in an era where big downtown Chicago construction projects have dried up. The Legislative Working Group on Energy has people discussing data centers, which use a ton of electricity and water, and because of that, the issue has seeped into the energy bill talks. There are those who say a compromise could be reached. A couple of these hyperscalers who operate gigantic data centers want to be exempted from BIPA, from doing things like using facial recognition in artificial intelligence learning, but that's probably impossible to pass, say some negotiation participants. Instead, the idea to grant the data centers their more modest ask of being treated like other businesses under BIPA. That could reopen the doors here to more construction and likely prevent neighboring states from poaching the centers, possibly polluting shared air and water, or shared air with purpose-built natural gas electricity plants, draining shared water and sucking up electricity from the shared grid system without any Illinois benefit. In return, some reforms could be put into the bill, particularly on transparency of water and electrical usage and banning the use of diesel backup generators. But there's a big problem with this plan. The Illinois Trial Lawyers Association is expected to hotly oppose any effort to block or limit lawsuits, which is what they always do. Labor and ITLA are historical allies, and they're both very prominent members of the Democratic Party's coalition. So some unions have been given the task of neutralizing the trial lawyers. I talked with an ITLA executive late last week who said he has not yet been approached about this topic in relation to the energy bill. Either way, it's up to the unions to resolve the dispute. Would resolving this issue break the logjam and bring labor on board? I have no idea. There are so many moving pieces right now, and it's impossible to tell. But what I do know is that if the unions aren't somehow moved to proponent status, or if the two issues can't be separated from each other into two different bills, the energy legislation is in a world of hurt come the fall veto session. Moving on to A3 courts, gunman gets prison time, video woman shot in the leg during bar altercation. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. Police said Seswan A. Givens reacted to being punched by a woman in a bar by pulling out a handgun and shooting her in the leg. The 29-year-old Decatur man is now lodged in the Graham Correctional Center for the start of a 10-year sentence after pleading guilty to the unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. The case had been heading for trial after Givens made a previous plea of not guilty to that charge and also denied other offenses alleging aggravated battery, the aggravated discharge of a gun, and a further charge accusing him of the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Givens, held in custody since his arrest April 11th, had been scheduled to face a pretrial hearing September 23rd, but he made a surprise appearance in Macon County Circuit Court August 22nd and said he was ready to take a plea deal. He then admitted the single unlawful possession offense in return for all the other charges being dismissed. The shooting dates to the night of March 9th and happened inside the premises of 22nd Street Discount Liquor. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said surveillance video showed the 26-year-old female victim sitting in the bar when she was approached by Givens. He wore a distinctive blue hoodie with the word BEAST emblazoned in white across the chest. DPD officers observed that the suspect appears to say something to the woman, and she stands up from her seat, said Detective Jeremy Appenzeller, who signed the affidavit. DPD officers observed the suspect and the woman to be standing face-to-face having a verbal exchange. DPD officers observed her to then punch the suspect approximately 3 times in the head and face area. Officers then observed an apparent muzzle flash between the suspect and the woman. She falls to the ground and grabs her right leg in the area where she was shot. Appenzeller said the victim later told police she had recognized Givens as the man who shot her, and another person said the defendant had called them up and confessed to the shooting. The affidavit did not explain what had sparked the verbal confrontation that preceded the violence. Cannabis drug made from pot reduces back pain, Matthew Perrone, Associated Press, Washington. An experimental medication made from marijuana successfully reduced back pain in a new study, offering further support for the drug's potential in treating one of the most common forms of chronic pain. The 800-patient study by a German drug maker is the latest evidence of the therapeutic properties of cannabis, which remains illegal under U.S. federal law, even as most states have made it available for medical or recreational use. Health officials in Canada and Europe previously approved a pharmaceutical-grade form of cannabis for several types of pain, including nerve pain due to multiple sclerosis. In the U.S., the Food and Drug Administration approved a drug containing CBD, one of the many non-intoxicating chemicals found in cannabis to treat rare seizures in children with epilepsy. Unlike that drug, known as Epidiolex, the cannabis formula from drug maker Vertanical contains THC, the active ingredient in marijuana that gets users high. But levels of the chemical are very low, essentially a microdose compared to what's available in gummies, chocolate bars, and other products sold at marijuana dispensaries in the U.S. The company said patients in the trial didn't show any signs of drug abuse, dependence, or withdrawal. Vertanical is seeking approval for a large group of patients, those suffering from lower back pain, chronic condition that affects millions and has few proven treatments. Over-the-counter pain relievers like ibuprofen can't be used for long-term pain because of their side effects, which include stomach ulcers and indigestion. Opioids are no longer recommended after the overprescribing of painkillers such as OxyContin in the 1990s and 2000s led to the ongoing epidemic of addiction to that class of drug. Chronic pain is one of the most frequently cited conditions of people enrolling in state-run medical marijuana programs, but there's been little rigorous research on the drug's use in that group. Lead study author Dr. Matthias Karst said in an email that the new findings show cannabis can significantly reduce pain and improve physical function in patients with chronic lower back pain without the safety concerns commonly associated with opioids. Karst is a pain specialist at Hanover Medical School and a consultant for Vertanical. For the new study, patients with back pain were randomly assigned to take Vertanical's proprietary liquid cannabis extract or a placebo. At the end of 12 weeks, patients taking the medication reported a nearly 2-point reduction in pain on an 11-point scale compared with 1.4 points for those taking placebo. The difference was statistically significant. Those getting the drug also reported improvements in sleep and physical function. Public safety. Woman shoved in confrontation. Decatur police report that a 74-year-old Decatur woman, upset that two of her lawnmowers had been stolen, set out to find them, but it didn't end well. The mowers were taken from an address in the 300 block of East Condit Street, and the woman told police she found them around 5:20 p.m. Friday in the 1300 block of the same street. The victim and another acquaintance had decided they were going to ride around the neighborhood looking for the suspect, said Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department. They found a gentleman whom they believed to be the suspect, and an argument followed. The suspect had used two hands to push the female and left the scene. Reports did not indicate the woman was injured. Closen said the alleged mower thief is wanted on a charge of aggravated battery of a senior citizen. Decatur man reports gun threat. Decatur police say a Decatur man reported that he was threatened with a gun after he waded into a dispute between an ex-girlfriend and a male suspect over drug money. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department, speaking Sunday, said the confrontation happened around 9 a.m. Thursday in the 300 block of East Marietta Street after the woman was accused of owing the suspect money for narcotics. The 39-year-old male victim was then described as getting into a physical tussle with the suspect, during which he felt what he believed was a gun pressed against his body, Closen said. No firearm was seen, but the guy just felt like it could have been the muzzle of a gun, he added. Closen said the victim was not hurt, and police are seeking the suspect on a charge of aggravated assault. Police pizza delivery driver punched in the face, Decatur. A driver making a pizza delivery got out of his vehicle and was confronted by a group of five teenagers who didn't want to pay, police report. The confrontation happened around midnight Saturday in the 1100 block of East Locust Street and ended with the 34-year-old driver being punched in the face and robbed of the two pizzas he was carrying. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said the teenage males, who ranged in age from around 15 to 18, had earlier tried to insist over the driver's objections that the pizzas had already been paid for. A verbal altercation ensued over whether or not the pizza had been paid for at the time it was ordered, Closen added. During the argument, the delivery driver was punched and the two pizzas were taken from him, he said. The suspects were being sought on a robbery charge. Closen described the driver as not being injured seriously in the attack, suffering some swelling to his face. Distrust grows with government shutdown risk. Lisa Mascaro, Associated Press, Washington. The money started drying up quickly almost as soon as President Donald Trump began issuing his executive orders. Head Start funds for early childhood programs, National Institutes of Health grants, funding for the nation's public libraries and museums. Money from a landmark bipartisan infrastructure law to help schools renovate classrooms in states, building electric vehicle charging stations, Federal Emergency Management Agency food and shelter assistance. There's a lot of fear out there, said Tommy Sheridan, deputy director of the National Head Start Association, whose organization raised early concerns about funding delays that could affect children and families. While the money is largely flowing again, he said, obviously we need to make sure our funding is reliable. The Trump administration stalled, scrapped, or withheld billions of dollars so far this year, with as much as $410 billion at risk by some congressional estimates. Trump's willingness to order the government agencies to halt spending approved by Congress and signed into law is a violation, according to a nonpartisan government watchdog. It's creating a crisis on Capitol Hill and beyond with an undercurrent of deep distrust as lawmakers clash over legislation to prevent a federal government shutdown. Every single one of us should be deeply alarmed by the lawless course the administration is charting here, Senator Patty Murray, the top Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Committee, said at a summer hearing with Trump's budget director, Russ Vogt, a chief architect of Project 2025. On the surface, the standoff between Congress and the White House looks like a governmental dispute over federal spending levels. But from the Department of Government Efficiency's budget slashing efforts under billionaire Elon Musk, to the budget rescission packages vote sent to Capitol Hill, what's unfolding is a deeper debate over the separation of powers, raising questions over what happens if the White House moves more aggressively to cut House and Senate lawmakers out of the federal funding process. Trump's Office of Management and Budget directed agencies to prepare for mass firings, reductions in force, rather than simply furloughs of federal workers in the event of a shutdown. This is a high point in presidential assertion over the spending power. It might be the highest point ever, said Kevin Kosar, a scholar at the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute. While past presidents challenged Congress, Jimmy Carter vetoed dozens of spending bills, and George W. Bush used presidential signing statements to carve out sections of legislation he agreed with, Kosar said what Trump is doing really garbles the logic of entire budget process. The rules don't really apply much anymore, he said. It will come to an inflection point on September 30th when Congress must pass legislation to keep the government from shutting down. Vogt's office did not respond to a request from an interview. Writing in Project 2025, Vogt explained the great challenge facing a conservative president is the existential need for aggressive use of the vast powers of the executive branch. He said this will require a boldness to bend or break the bureaucracy to the presidential will. Since Trump took office in January, a federal watchdog, the Government Accountability Office, issued a flurry of notices of violations in a rare reprimand of instances where the Trump administration failed to release the money in accordance with the appropriation laws from Congress. Among the dozens of investigations GAO opened this year, the funding uncertainty around Head Start, the NIH museums and libraries, energy and transportation infrastructure programs, and FEMA are among those deemed violations. More decisions are expected in the days ahead before the September 30th deadline for the federal government to get certain funds out the door. Eda Emanuele Perez, the general counsel at GAO, which was created more than 100 years ago as a check on federal spending, said presidents have the ability to propose spending rollbacks so long as they follow the process. If Congress then decides, yes, we agree, we're going to pass a law to cancel the funds, then the funds get canceled, she said. If Congress does not pass it, then that means the president has to again go back to the terms of the law and release those funds. That's outlined in the Impoundment Control Act, which Congress approved in 1974 after concerns over then-President Richard Nixon's refusal to allocate funds to programs he opposed. It requires the White House to notify Congress of its proposed rescissions. Congress then has 45 days under a fast-track procedure to vote on the president's proposal. This summer, Congress, where Republicans hold the majority, approved Trump's request to claw back about $9 billion in already approved funding for public broadcasting, including National Public Radio and certain foreign aid programs, over the objections of Democrats. Late last month, the White House sent Congress a second rescissions package of $4.9 billion in cuts to USAID foreign or USAID foreign aid programs, bumping up against the September 30th year-end deadline. If Congress fails to act before Tuesday, the money would essentially go away in a so-called pocket rescission. The Trump administration is committed to getting America's fiscal house in order by cutting government spending that is woke, weaponized, and wasteful, the White House said in a message to Congress announcing the rescissions proposal. Higher education. Decatur man, learning has no age limit. 83-year-old graduates WGU master's program. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Age and illness didn't stop Decatur resident Alfred De Vera from going back to college. It was challenging, but also deeply rewarding, he said. I learned that age does not set limits. The only limits are the ones we place on ourselves. The 83-year-old student recently graduated from Western Governors University with a master's degree in management and leadership. I chose this program because it allowed me to continue advancing my knowledge while also keeping my mind active during difficult time in my life, he said. De Vera enrolled at WGU while also battling lymphoma. He said he had two reasons for returning to college: his strong belief in the value of education and the battle with cancer. I wanted something positive to focus on, he said, and returning to school gave me purpose and kept myself engaged. Education has always been an important focus for De Vera. An example, he said he wanted to show his children, grandchildren, and even the young people he meets in the community to show them that it is never too late to pursue education, he said. Although his family was supportive during his time in college, he was an inspiration to them as well. De Vera was the first to earn a master's degree. His children have completed their undergraduate studies, and their grandchildren are now pursuing advanced degrees, he said. They've seen my journey and know that education is possible at any age, he said. I've also encouraged nephews, nieces, and even people I meet in daily life, whether at work, in church, or in a fast food line, to continue their schooling and not settle for less. De Vera immigrated from the Philippines to the United States in 1969. His career would include computer programming and information technology, and eventually as a financial services manager and IT systems manager. He had been active in both work and community life throughout his years in Decatur. Even through retirement, I've stayed engaged, volunteering with shelters and mentoring younger people, he said. The local graduate finished his degree in 2.5 years. Alfred has a positive mindset, moving forward, and recognizes that there's no such thing as too late, Ashley Winowicz, representing the college, said. Alfred is prepared for any opportunities that come his way as he sees education as a path to upward mobility in his life. WGU is a nonprofit online university founded in 1997 by 19 U.S. governors, more than 190,000 students nationwide have been awarded more than 420,000 degrees, according to a news release. De Vera said he hopes to teach and give back to the community through mentoring and volunteering, even if formal teaching doesn't happen. I see education as a lifelong commitment, he said. I've also been involved in volunteer work at shelters and community programs, and I'd like to continue serving in that way. De Vera added, his experiences at WGU showed him that opportunities are always there, if you prepare for them, he said. I often remind myself that every day brings a chance to learn something new, no matter your stage of life. There's a great medium-sized color photo here. 83-year-old Alfred De Vera wearing the mask is pictured at a ceremony celebrating his recent graduation with a master's degree in management and leadership from Western Governors University. And he's seated in the front row in between two women who they're all wearing kind of a royal blue robes. And he's pictured there with his royal blue robe and mortarboard and a bow tie, a beautiful gold and polka dot bow tie and his gold cane. Provided photo. We'll wrap up this first half hour on the weather page B8 with the Decatur 4-day forecast. Today, very warm, high of 91, wind northeast 6 to 12 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 54, wind northeast 4 to 8 miles per hour. Wednesday, warm with high clouds, high of 86, low of 56, wind east southeast 6 to 12 miles per hour. Thursday, very warm, high of 87 and low of 57, wind south-southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour. Friday, sunny and very warm, high of 87 and low of 60, wind south-southwest 6 to 12 miles per hour. Regional outlook, sunny and very warm today with the temperature approaching the record of 94 set in 1922. Expect a full day of sunshine with average relative humidity 45% and good drying conditions. Partly cloudy tonight. Sunrise, 6:51, back to the Skywatch, rather, sorry. Skywatch sunrise, 6:51 a.m., set 6:39 p.m. Moonrise, 3:15 p.m., set none. Full moon, October 6th, last quarter moon, October 13th. New moon, October 21st, and first quarter, October 29th. All right, let's see here. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.